Chris Cormack has a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science and a Bachelor of Arts in Mathematics and Maori Studies. While working for Katapo Communications, he was the lead developer of the original version of Koha, which went live on January 5, 2000. Since then, he has served various roles in the community: Release Manager, Quality Assurance Manager, and Translation Manager. He is an elected Release Manager for version 3.4. Chris currently works for Catalyst IT in Wellington. He believes in free software and allowing users the freedom to innovate. So Chris, thank you for your time today to talk about open source software. I thought I'd get you to start out by telling us a little bit about you and your role.
Okie dokie. I've got kind of two roles. For my work role, my job title is Senior Developer, and I work at Catalyst IT, which is a general IT shop that specializes in open source software. And apart from that, I'm also the Koha release manager for the Koha free software integrated library management system project.
Okay.
So in most of my daily work now is actually working on Koha, but I used to do all sorts of stuff like working on media sites and those kind of things.
And how did you become involved in the ILS side of things?
Way back in 99, I worked for a small company called Katipo Communications, and they were contracted by a library trust to write Koha for them, and that's how I got involved.
Okay, so you've been involved from the get-go, really?
Pretty much, yep.
Cool. Okay, so is there anything else you wanted to tell us about your role before I move on to my next question?
No, I think that's about it.
Okay, cool. So what do you think is the kind of definition of open source software? What do you see it as being?
Right. So when I'm talking about open source software, I'm kind of using it interchangeably with free software. So I'm really meaning free software when I say open source software.
Yeah.
What that means to me is that it's software that provides me with the four key freedoms, which is the freedom to run the software, obviously, for any purpose, the freedom to study and change it, the freedom to redistribute it, and the freedom to distribute any of my changes that I've made. So when I'm saying open source software, I'm meaning software that has a license attached to it that allows me those four freedoms.
Okay. And what are the benefits of this model? Like, what do you think makes this such a good way to operate?
So I'll take a look first from the philosophical end.
Yep.
So I think that allowing people those freedoms is key. It allows people to innovate. It allows people to... Computers are a core part of people's daily lives, and they should be able to know what their software is doing. They should be able to fix bugs in it, and they should be able to share those fixes with the people they know and care about and those kind of things. It's like computers have become about it's going to kind of like a hammer kind of thing. It's a tool that everyone has and knows how to use, or at least is moving in that direction. And I think it's key that you should have some control over what's running on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, or at least be able to pay someone. It's like buying a car. If you buy a Toyota, you can take it to a mechanic that you trust to fix it, or you can fix it yourself, or you can swap the exhaust out, put a different one in, as long as you don't breach your warranty fitness conditions. You don't have to always take that car back to Toyota to get it fixed, and you don't have to wait 5 years for the next model from the Toyota to come out. You can upgrade it yourself, those kind of things. So I think the software being in that kind of thing, and I think that proprietary software is kind of an aberration. There's nothing quite like it anywhere else in the world. You don't, builders, if they build you a house, they don't get to charge you rent to live in that forever and decide they can kick you out and change the license of you living in there and those kind of things. So it's kind of, proprietary software is kind of weird. And so I kind of don't understand why anyone uses it. That's the philosophical kind of angle.
Yeah.
And then from the practical angle, there are a whole lot of reasons why having many people looking at your code is a good thing. It's the same kind of idea as peer-reviewed articles and medical journals and those kind of things. It's the idea that the crowd is wiser than any one person. So proprietary software kind of banks on the fact that the person writing it is the smartest person in the world, and open source software admits that isn't true and says that if we let other people see it, they'll spot the mistakes I made and fix them, and contribute other interesting and new things. So the code is better generally. The barrier to entry is much lower, so you can get people working on your software from all around the world. You can get people who want to just scratch a particular itch that they'd never be able to get that code into a proprietary release.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the security point, there's a whole, that's why the Department of Defense and the states and stuff like it is, they can audit the code. They can see what's running. They can see if there's any backdoors in there, those kind of things. So yeah, from a kind of pragmatic standpoint, there's lots of evidence to suggest that it produces much better, much more robust code in a shorter time span.
And that's really about the community, isn't it? That...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's one of the kind of misconceptions with free software, I guess it's from the word free, it's kind of loaded in English, mm-hmm. is that there's an idea that there's the opposite of free software or open source software is commercial software, and that's not the case. The opposite is proprietary software. They can both be commercial, you can both make livings from them. It's just a matter of how you choose to license the software. So it's, the practical thing is that you can still have a company behind it, you can still have a bunch of companies behind it, but just the fact is that they aren't the only ones who can modify the code. It's just the key difference.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys obviously do some work with libraries in terms of library management systems. Do you do any other work with different types of software, open source software with libraries?
Yeah, we often do work with content management systems. So Drupal is one that we do quite a lot of. A little bit of WordPress. Lots of other stuff that people don't realise is their libraries using, like mail transport agents, you know, Postfix and those kind of things that send all your emails that run in the background, web servers to run your website, those kind of things. So even some libraries you aren't using any, what would say, open source application, well, desktop-y side or even client-side applications in the web browser are still using open source on their web server to actually serve their website, even if they go off and make it in Front Page or Dreamweaver or whatever they like. There's still a bunch of open source core stuff in the background serving it.
Cool.
So it kind of goes from that low level up to, you know, the whole stack. We have yet to do a library who's got every single machine running open source, but we're pretty close. There's a couple that still run a couple of Windows machines, and that's mostly because of RFID applications that can't talk to a Linux machine yet, so they have a Windows machine in the way between the two.
Yeah, I imagine there's some situations too where libraries that are part of bigger organisations need to be able to use enterprise solutions that only operate in a Windows environment. Okay, so on that kind of enterprise angle, we've all had experiences with IT departments telling us that open source software isn't safe or isn't stable or secure. Or why do you think organisations are so uncertain about open source? And do you think there is a message that we can communicate to them to remove that fear factor?
I think it's changing a lot. Certainly in the 10 years I've been, or 11 years now I've been working with libraries, the message, the sell job is a lot easier now than it was then. There are younger people coming through university and joining IT departments and councils who aren't quite as locked in the proprietary mindset, who have been exposed to open source software either at university or outside university through their friends and those kind of things. So it's slowly changing that way. A lot of the attitudes are There's kind of two different attitudes. One is one who is a person who's seeking to keep their job safe. And if they've invested a huge amount of time and effort into learning these proprietary technologies, and that effort will be wasted if they move away from them. So there's an amount of that. I think that's probably same as the same kind of thing that happens with, say, Mark, and the fact that the move away from that is so slow because there are people who have invested, you know, countless years of their lives understanding all of it. And so and those kind of ones you can't win over with arguments, because unless you can do a mind transfer of knowledge, the argument's not going to actually help them in that situation. So those ones you kind of just have to wait out. But for other people who are listening to those people, then you have arguments that you can explain to them. And usually the best one is to show them examples proving what they've been told is false. So if they've been told it's insecure, you point to the fact that the U.S. Department of Defense deploys it in a majority of their, you know, critical systems, you know, driving aircraft carriers and stuff, which you want to be fairly sure is secure.
Absolutely.
For stability, it runs, you know, 90% of the web. And Wall Street, and I mean, I think the whole of the French gendarmerie now run Ubuntu on all their desktops.
Uh-huh.
So there's lots of, I think that the easiest argument there is to, you've got to pick what they've said and find a counterpoint example. And that's probably the only way you can do it, is to show that's demonstrably false. So, you know, if they say no big enterprises are running it, you point to, you know, NASA runs their website in Drupal, or, you know, the department, Democratic Party, when Obama was running for election, ran their website on Silverstripe, which was arguably the most popular website in the world for about 5-6 weeks. So there's those kind of ones So pretty much all the arguments there is a counterpoint for now, so it's actually a lot easier than when you're starting, when you just had to, when you knew that they were going to be stable, but you couldn't show them that they already were. Yeah, so it's easier now. A lot of other people have done it already.
And there's starting to be a policy shift, I've noticed, too, in the last couple of years in Australian government, that is starting to mandate that open source solutions must be considered as, you know, as part of any process.
I think the help of that, I mean, the fact of the economy not being so great actually helps that too, because when you're investing public money, it's nice if you can show that is used for public good. And invest it in open source software, you can, because any changes you make, excuse me, go back to the community rather than to a multinational that you may see no tax from ever. It's a bit easier now. I think, the key thing is just you have to listen to what they're saying and try and find counterpoints. There are some legitimate arguments for having to use proprietary software, and that's usually if an open source equivalent just doesn't exist.
Sure.
And it doesn't exist the right one. But that's usually about the only valid one left.
Yeah, I guess the other one that gets bandied around a little bit is, you know, we can't support this application, but I guess that's where companies like yours come in, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So there's for Koha, for example, that argument's quite easy to negate, because there are now 37 support companies around the world.
Wow.
Three of them in New Zealand that base their business on supporting Koha. So it's quite easy to say, well, you don't have to, just pick one of these ones. And that's quite a persuasive argument when people have been used to the one vendor, one system model. And often there are people who like their system but don't like their vendor. And if you can say, well, if you're using this, you'd never get into that situation. You can keep your system, just change your vendor. And that's actually usually quite persuasive. And it's usually more persuasive for the legal department type people than the actual technical ones, because they're the ones who get stuck with the complaints, and they can't, you know, get out of these contracts that they're locked into for 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So
there's
giving you options works.
Yeah, there's also, I've seen kind of a strong push in a number of places to outsource support and even supply of library systems. I know somewhere where I worked, it was a strategic agenda was to move the library systems out, I think, essentially because we just wanted too much.
Yeah.
It was easier to shove us off. But that's a really powerful thing and powerful opportunity mm-hmm. for libraries in terms of open source.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a big move around the world to cloud-type arrangements, or software as a service, you know, hosted mm-hmm. outside your library. Then running it in open source actually makes it a little bit safer for you, because that means that you can move off that. You know, if your provider goes away, you're not stuck with a system that no one else can run, which is when you stick it up in the cloud, there's always that risk that whoever you're hosting with disappears.
Yeah, and the ILS marketplace has been fairly volatile in the last few years.
Yeah, it has been, yep.
Yeah.
Certainly. We're getting a lot of migrations from Horizon because of that kind of reason.
They
didn't want to go to Symfony.
Yeah. We're going to be talking to a library vendor about their SaaS services as well and what they can offer. So I think it's really interesting to note that you can do SaaS-based services with open source software as well.
Yeah. Most of the US libraries are actually running in the cloud. I think Bywater use Rackspace and CloudSpace, which is what NASA use as well, I think, to host most of their services. Not so much in New Zealand because our internet's not quite good enough yet, certainly for the small libraries, but it'll get there.
Yeah.
But we do have some government departments who are hosted as software as a service with us, and because they got nice fast connections running their special libraries.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess to finish up, you did talk a little bit about that philosophical angle of freedom, but you mentioned to me that you only use free software and free as in freedom. So, and you've mentioned the importance of that in terms of individuals, but is there a kind of a personal angle for you on that freedom?
Yeah, I try to. There's every so often I have to use someone's Windows computer or something, but I try not to have to. And there's a few reasons for it. It's that mainly is because I want to use something that I can, I have some idea what it's doing. I can, if I want to look at it, I can, or I can rest on the fact that someone else probably has looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Lynx Google, I don't read all of that, but I bank on the fact that there are thousands of people around the world doing that for me. And also, I want to reward those who are writing free software and making a living from it. So I'd rather pay them than to pay someone else who is essentially selling someone else's work again and again and again.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I'd much rather pay the artist than the record company as well. That's that same kind of. Kind of ideas that I'd rather reward the creators than the resellers. And I think a lot of the cost of proprietary software is, you know, it's gone through eight hands maybe before it gets to you. So there's a lot of ticket clipping going on.
Yeah.
And I think it's better served to reward the people doing the creative work than to, certainly in this day and age where you don't need this huge, marketing and transportation machine to move your stuff around. The internet exists. And then for the other reason is that generally, on the whole, most of the proprietary companies actually do quite nasty things apart from make proprietary software. So Apple, you know, doesn't have the best record in terms of user privacy or not employing children and those kind of things. So, in a purely kind of ethical standpoint there as well, I'd rather not give them my money if I have an option to give it to someone else. So there's that kind of, which isn't really a software argument, it's usually, but it's just that often usually the companies that think a proprietary license is a good idea often think that some other things that I think are unethical are a good idea as well.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes hand in hand.
It's nice to see someone practicing what they preach as well from
an
outside perspective.
it's hard sometimes. There's certain things that you have to give down and break down. Usually if a client needs you to use them. But mostly, I think at work here we've got 113 people, and I think there's only about 3 Windows machines. Everyone else is running Linux or BSD or something.
So wow.
It's kind of a company thing.
That's good. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time today to chat about open source software. I'm sure that will be very useful for students. They always like to hear from someone other than me.
Right.
So thank you very much, Chris.
And, no problem.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. See ya.